All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast. Excuse me, not podcast, Matt. Podcast. We're keeping this in. No edits, no, unless we something bad happens, but we're keeping that in. MWWire.com is our website where you can start finding previews or top 49 non-conference games out there by our staff, plus some other, some non-conference early season preview stuff going on, Matt. You're spearheading a lot of that, but this week, preview number two, Utah State Aggies.
We're a freight train. You can't stop us now.
No, we're going to go through. We did Colorado State last episode, so go download our podcast from there. If you missed it, just wherever, however you're listening to this podcast, just go back and like, ooh, maybe I missed CSU. I didn't care. We gave some good nuggets for a good 75-minute podcast. So that was team one. We're doing this on Twitter for voting purposes, MWC Wire. So, Matt, you said we're picking, or you actually did the picking this first two and probably continue. You pick four new teams every time. So Utah State, who do they beat out this week?
Okay. I can't remember who I put in the poll for this one. I believe they beat out, I'm trying to remember who I put in. Air Force was one of them. I can't remember the other two off the top of my head. I think Wyoming in there, and I honestly don't remember.
Okay. It's okay.
But it was a decisive victory for our Aggies followers out there.
Not shocking. Utah State, whenever we have a poll, it's the Aggies. Like they are. Yeah. One of the teams
over
that are
typically... Air Force, San Jose State, and UNLV, to answer your question.
Gotcha. I thought you, for a minute, I thought you UNLV would get there because I'm very excited to talk about the Rebels. But yes, Utah State had 38% of the vote. Pretty close. Air Force, UNLV 20, San Jose State 23%.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about the Aggies, every time we do these preview podcasts, we talk about last year, stuff like that, what happened. They were... Is this like the epitome of a Jekyll and Hyde team last year, the way they started, the way they finished with their 6-7 record and a bowl appearance?
I mean, that's one way to put it because, you know, after opening the year with a harder than expected win over UConn, which we'll talk more about a little bit later, I'm sure. Definitely. You know, they dropped four straight, including, you know, some of them maybe not so surprising, you know, on the road at Alabama, on the road at a ranked BYU. Some of them definitely a little more surprising, like, you know, losing by four touchdowns to Weber State. But to their credit, you know, the Aggies turned it around. They won five of their next six, you know, pulled some relatively surprising upsets. You know, Air Force, I think, was one of the bigger upsets that any team in the Mountain West had last year. And then, you know, very nearly toppled Boise in the season finale before that game got away from them in the final minutes. And then... You know, I don't know how much you necessarily learn from a blah bowl loss, but it was definitely an interesting prelude to an offseason that has seen a lot of turnover, you know, some out of their control, of course, you know, with graduations, you know, Brian Cobbs, Alfred Edwards moving on to the NFL, guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
But also a huge talent exodus through the transfer portal. And so it was definitely a roller coaster. You know, they took several steps backwards. You know, they would take a few steps forward and then maybe another step or two backwards. But I do think there's a couple of things that sort of provide a little bit of color to that sort of simplistic judgment. One, they were 4-0 in games decided by 8 or fewer points. So on the one hand, maybe they were a little bit lucky even to get to 6-7 in a bowl game. But on the flip side, you know, one thing that came out of the spring prospectus that the program put together is, you know, of the players that are coming back for 2022, you know, many of them that we'll talk about, you know, during the course of this podcast, they had 15 starters miss 59 combined games last year. And yeah, 39 different Aggies made at least one start. That was tied for 14th most of any team in the country. So yeah, they're undergoing a huge, you know, upheaval on both sides of the ball. But as we've talked about here and there throughout the offseason to this point, the cupboard isn't bare. But maybe more so than a lot of other teams in the conference, there's a what you might call wider error bars, where it seems like the possibilities for what this year's Aggies team could look like is a lot less clear cut than it might be for some other teams that are more clearly contenders or, you know, teams that are still very clearly in a rebuild. Utah State sort of occupies that unknown in between where it could go either way. Like they could slide further backwards, as evidenced by the point that, they're projected 116th in preseason SP plus right now. So the expectations are relatively low, but they have enough coming back to make you think that they could make another run at a bowl game, if not more.
We'll see. One of their big issues, injuries, was quarterback last year. They had Logan Bonner. They had who they played, Blaine Davi Bishop Davenport. They played Andrew Peasley, dragged his leg, or excuse me, Levi Williams, get the one you guys mixed up, dragging his leg to play in a game late in the season. Cooper Legault. That didn't help at all. But the injuries just crushed him last year. I think didn't Alfred Edwards miss a couple of games still on the offensive line, I believe. I think he's out for a little bit.
I think he was
But he's
one of the
gone
few guys who
regardless.
stayed healthy, if I remember
Well,
correctly.
I've tried to remember. Maybe I should look that up. But he's gone regardless. Doesn't matter. But the injury, but the main people focus quarterback. They're rotating through guys, and like the Alabama loss doesn't matter. UNLV was reasonably surprising last year. BYU game was somewhat close, but that was like a Saturday Thursday turnaround. But yeah, not having consistent lineup, because we've seen this with other teams. Like what have we said for Boise State the past couple of years? Offensive line. Shuffling guys in and out due to inefficiency or injury, and their running game is like not great. So keeping guys healthy, whether it be quarterback or other positions, is key. And yeah, they did go to bowl game, got their butt beat by Memphis at the First Responders Bowl. But obviously, coach or the coaches they have there, it's like I don't know what to expect. That's my main thing. Like all these guys are gone. Like you mentioned, the wide margin, like. Past couple of years, Utah State's been like, we'll see. They bring in Logan Bonner for Arkansas State. They bring in all these coaches. They bring in new talent. They lose a lot of talent this year. They have injuries last year. The past couple of years, I've honestly been like, I don't know how good this team is. And that's kind of hard to prognosticate or predict how good they could be this year, particularly with losing a couple coaches, losing all these players to portal. I don't think they got the same return talent from what they lost because they lost so many players to Power Five teams. To BYU is now upgraded. He lost guys to Baylor, Washington State, and all these other guys. And I don't know how Blake Anderson's going to handle it. It's going to be it's every school has this, and maybe Utah State was just on the slightly higher end of guys lost,
Yeah.
but
Well, it's not only that, too. Like, they also have two new coordinators working under Anderson as well.
they do. They had to bring in a couple guys.
Joe Coffin, the new DC, Kyle Cipolla, who was, I believe he was promoted to co-offensive coordinator, coaching wide receivers. So, there's just as much, turnover on the sidelines as there is on, in the personnel that's on the field, too. So, maybe one useful sort of flashpoint question that I could pose to you might sort of set the tone for exactly what we're talking about. Because we always talk about quarterbacks first, how much of a believer are you in Cooper Legault at this point?
Very much so. We've seen him do enough. Like I know he because here's the one thing I point at. Oregon State in the Come Bowl 2 years ago. He had to come in off the bench and I know his first play, oh, amazing touchdown pass, which is like some bowl record for some obscure thing. First play off the bench, touchdown pass, 60 something yards. Him coming in cold and playing well in that game was extremely promising. Like, hey, this guy could come into play. He knows what he's doing. And then last year, we all know it would be Logan Bonner being the quarterback. But then there's so many injuries for what they had. I'm a believer in what he can do. Trying to see where do you, I don't have a front of me, I should have pulled up. Do you have where we ranked Utah State's quarterback room under our staff projections?
I believe, I don't have that off the top of my head, but I remember that it was a lot higher than I expected it to be.
Because if we think about the quarterback now, because even the quarterback room has experience too, because you still have Levi Williams, no more Logan Bonner, obviously trying to just moved on graduation, and even Davenport's still there, even though he may not play a ton. But we look at the
They were
quarterbacks who are
third,
better.
by the way.
Oh, they're third. Who was one and two? Boise and
Boise and San
San
Jose
Jose.
State.
I could see that because if you look at the whole league, Hawaii's kind of right there. CSU, we're not sure. Clay Millen might be better than him. Just because of, but freshman, I think experience helps. Wyoming, they're better than Air Force. We don't know. New Mexico, most likely, even though you're high on the Lobos bringing their UAB guys to come over to play offense and coach that side of the ball. That's not overly shocking to think they could be third. It's close, though. Like Clay Millen's close. Even I like San Diego State's situation at quarterback. What Jalen Maeda did, there's potential for him to be really good in that in this upcoming season with the full year to play. So, It's not shocking. So they have a quarterback who could do things, clearly, who we have confidence in him. He's been able to play and do well. It's just the health thing is kind of the big question mark. But it, I think it's probably more fluky than not if you go through four quarterbacks in a season.
I mean, I would agree, but I would add to that that consistency was the one thing that really eluded him last year. Mm-hmm. And I think that that really nothing illustrates that better than his performance in the games that he played in that the Aggies won versus the ones that he played in that they lost. So, you know, and it was, I believe, five wins, three losses, or 5 wins, 5 losses that it was counted for, 10 games, 8 starts. So in the games that they counted as wins, and this is according to CFBstats.com, 65.3% completion rate, pretty good.
Yeah.
7.7 yards per attempt. Also pretty good. And maybe most importantly, for every interception he threw two touchdowns. So 2-to-1 TD and interception ratio. Okay. All pretty good.
Yeah.
But in the games that they lost, his completion rate dropped to 56%. His yards per attempt dropped from 7.7 to 5.7. And his touchdowns to interception ratio flipped. You know, for every touchdown, he threw two interceptions. And you know, one thing that really stood out to me in my research for this particular episode is the realization that the Aggies, regardless of whoever was under center, really liked to attack down the field. They liked to stretch the field with their pass catchers. You know, all three of the guys, Bonner, Bishop Davenport, and Legault, who had at least 50 pass attempts last year, according to Pro Football Focus, they all averaged at least 11 yards on average depth per attempt. Or average depth of target, excuse me. So I do think, like, if they continue to maintain that kind of aggression, I'm with you that he has the talent and he's got the moxie to be able to create with his legs. You know, he had a few rushing touchdowns as well. You know, after adjusting for sacks, he averaged about four and a quarter yards per carry. So I think that he has it in him to be a pretty good quarterback. But, you know, doing it week in and week out is sort of that last big challenge. And that, I think, more than a lot of things, is what's going to separate whether or not a team like Utah State can compete for a bowl or not. Because if he remains uneven, then that leaves a lot of question marks behind him. Because as much as we like to talk about Levi Williams, for example, he's, what, 3-4 years into his career now. And yeah, he's still more promise than production at this point. You know, we hardly saw him at all last year.
He was and, the third you know,
that,
last year,
that,
I believe.
That potato bowl performance that he had with Wyoming a couple of years ago. But again, that was just one game.
Yeah.
And behind those two, now you have, you know, two new quarterbacks because, of course, Davenport was one of the many Aggies who transferred. You know, mm-hmm. Chase Tuatagaloa and McKay Hillstead. Neither of them have seen the field ever. And so, you know, if Legault and or Williams ends up getting, you know, hit by the injury bug again, they could very easily find themselves in the exact same situation that sort of threatened to derail them last year.
Yeah, and also doesn't help losing key wide receivers, Calvin Tyler Jr., running back. You mentioned Alfred Edwards offensive line. We already did. Like, they lose a good amount of talent on offense. Like, Brian Cobbs was their big deep. It was their Cobbs their deep threat receiver. Mm-hmm. He's gone. They have Terrell Vaughn there, but he's like a shorter slot type of guy. So maybe that deep, which you mentioned, their average depth of attempt or target, whatever the term was for deep ball, essentially, that may not necessarily be there. I don't have the confidence, at least at the moment, for it to be there for losing guys that were catching those deep passes. So
and maybe more so than anything, priority number one, eliminate turnovers.
Yeah, that's
because their interception rate last year. Do you want to take a guess as to what their interception rate was last year?
Is 10% a high number?
I mean, that's about double what it was. 5.2%, but that is high.
I was trying to think what that number equates
like
to.
For the sake of comparison, when they won the conference championship 2 years ago, their interception rate was 2.9%, which in itself is still like slightly high. But, you know, that's definitely one of those areas where Legault is going to have to improve. You know, no killer mistakes. Or at a minimum, fewer killer mistakes.
Yeah. I think they have the guy to do it. Like, Legault's a good quarterback. It's just what's around him. That's what we need to look at. Because health-wise, we can't predict health-wise. It's like, well, you just can't. That's like, what are you going to say? Guy twists his ankle, does this. And there's nothing we could say. that would be that to be confident, like injury wise, it would just happen. But if Legault's healthy, like that's what we're all predicting here, projecting here. If these guys are healthy, here's what they expect to do. If Cooper Legault's healthy, I expect them to be like a top half quarterback in the conference. Like that three number is pretty high, but I can interchange him with Braden Traeger, with Clay Millen, with San Diego State, Jalen Maiden. I could put him in that range, but he's no worse than the top half quarterback. He might need to be better than that for them to proceed to a bowl appearance, but he's at least a, again, slightly above average quarterback in the Mountain West. And that's good. That's maybe what they need.
It's going to be interesting to see one way or another.
So what do we want to say about the running backs? They lose Calvin Tyler Jr., excuse me. Wait, is it? I always get it wrong. Is it Tyler or Turner? Why do I always get those confused up? They're exact same.
That's because Calvin Turner Jr. played for Hawaii.
I got it right the first time, Matt. That's
You
just, it's
did.
so similar. I'm like, I always question myself. Even if I say it, I should be confident in that. So he's gone, and he was a few injuries himself past couple years, but he's one of the best running backs in the conference, over 1,000 yards. I guess they're going to go with Robert Brooks. Seemed promising. He had almost about 350 yards. It kind of fits what Tyler did. If he's a similar back, maybe I could see a possible 800-yard rushing attack from him. But it all comes back with all these new guys, offensive line again, and Brooks has had just limited experience. Is he going to be like, can he take that next step to get 600 more yards?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I think, going to be more of a committee than it has been over the last couple of years with Tyler Jr. If only because, like, you know, replacing him one for one is going to be a tall ask for anybody. And especially since, you know, Briggs, you know, physically speaking, is very much like the opposite of someone like Calvin Tyler Jr. on the Utah State roster. He's only listed at 5'6 and 175 pounds.
Yeah, he's a box.
but they have brought in at least one interesting candidate that I've got my eye on who could be a Tyler Jr. type contributor, and that's Davon Booth. You know, from Cerritos College out here in California, you know, JUCO guy, 1,442 yards last year, 6.5 yards per attempt, 8 touchdowns. You know, one of the better running backs anywhere in the state in the junior college ranks. And he's exactly the kind of guy who at 5'10 and 200 pounds could step in and be that Tyler Jr. type of guy.
Yeah, it makes sense for Briggs and him to be a committee back there because 353 yards is nothing to, like, last year was fine. But when you have a guy who gets over 1,100 yards, what's, like, you know, I mean, what's the point? Like, that's what you're going with. And if Booth can keep that production in somewhat similar fashion with Utah State, they like Briggs has been there, been experienced. He knows what's going on. But I do like him. Like, I know JUCO to FBS is a pretty big jump regardless, because there's times where, oh, yeah, this guy's the number one ranked JUCO prospect. He's like, not all that great. So,
well, I think it can be more than the raw total. I think what's more instructive is the fact that Briggs, on a per carry basis, actually outdid Tyler Jr. last year.
Okay, it's
4.7 to 4.4. Yeah, and if he can maintain that, and if Booth can be at least a moderate net positive, you know, that duo right there could take a lot of pressure off of Legault, who, as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, is also a pretty astute runner himself when he has the space to do so.
Yeah, this is going to be an area, like all these positions with new, everybody's new except for Legault. He, even him, is kind of new. Like, he's not an entrenched starter. So Briggs comes in to start. JUCO transfers come in to start. New offensive lineman. Not really an experienced receiving group is coming back. This whole offense is basically what Terrell Vaughn, and then Legault's not even technically a starter, and Josh Sturzer on the tight end. Like, they do have two pass catchers back.
Spring prospectus, I think they tallied four starters back on offense.
Okay, not many.
Yeah.
And the skill, and we'll say to do, but receiving group might be their most experienced back with Sturzer and Vaughn, but Vaughn's not a guy going downfield. Like, he's not that type of guy. But they
he's a slot guy. Yeah, but yeah, I think, you know, to his credit, I think he might be, you know, one of, if not the top slot guy anywhere in the Mountain West. So at least they have that going for him.
Give him a quick pass. Yeah.
Yeah, 56 catches, 624 yards, 5 touchdowns, and maybe most importantly for a guy who occupies that role, 3.5% drop rate, which was the third lowest in the Mountain West.
Well, catch everything you wave, right?
And I think more broadly, you know, the challenge for the Aggies, at least on paper right now, is it does seem like their options on the inside are much more evident than they are on the outside. Because on the one hand, you know, they have Vaughn. They also bring back Kyle Van Leeuwen, who, you know, played 3 games last year before he was knocked out for the rest of the season with an injury. You know, they brought in Micah Davis from JUCO ranks 2 years ago. He was averaging over 22 yards a catch at Air Force. But that trio is probably going to hold down the one or two positions where they go 3 or 4 wide. That's no problem. Who's going to play outside? You know, who's going to replace those targets that went to Cobbs, that went to Justin McGriffin and guys like that last year?
Yeah.
And to that effect, you know, they have, that's the problem. And to that effect, you know, they have internal candidates who are going to be expected to take on larger roles. I'm thinking of guys like, you know, Otto Tia, who is at least in terms of the receivers listed on the current roster, sort of a singularly physical guy. You know, he's the tallest receiver listed on the roster, 6'4", 220. I have to imagine that in itself is going to get him a very long look to win a job in fall camp. Beyond that, you know, Jalen Royals played sparingly last year. Colby Bowman, you know, played sparingly at Stanford. He came in through the transfer portal. But again, you know, they have options here. It's just, you know, how they sift through those options and how well some of those newcomers step up is going to be, you know, another narrative to watch. And then on top of that, you know, tight end hasn't really been featured much over the last couple of years, but it could make a comeback because they do have both Josh Sturzer and Brock Lane back for 2023. So those guys too could, you know, step up and maybe see 40 targets a piece or something like that, and give the Aggies those sort of big physical targets over the middle, which is another wrinkle that could make Legault's life a lot easier under center.
Yeah, that's gonna be helpful, whoever can step up and be that guy, because I think what they have with Vaughn there, like you mentioned, the short stuff, that's good. Returning tight end, giant wide receiver, he said 6'4", 220, those type of things will hopefully give them the talent and the scheme to be able to use all three of those different type of, well, there's more than three, but those specific three players or type of players. It's kind of a difference what you can do on this team. Like the tight end, if they can step up, okay, that's middle of the field, second level kind of, because you got Vaughn underneath. And it's not, and whoever's good, I think the main thing is like the outside receiver. She's going to be their typical, like their non-slot receiver. So the two, three guys are going to the far side. Like, what are they going to do? Are they going to be possession guys? They're going to be able to go deep. Like Micah Davis could, maybe he's that deep threat guy. I know it's different.
I was going to say, we know he can be a deep threat guy. That's exactly what he did for the Falcons.
That's what it'll be, but it's also a different type of offense. He was a deep threat because they suck the safeties and corners in.
Yeah.
He has clear talent, but he's not, no way he's getting 22 yards a catch, but he's a guy who has a potential where Air Force, who was given a little benefit of the doubt or not, just the way the offense worked. The catches he were to make were going to be typically downfield catches or sunk in the safety where like a post pattern up the, where you go about what, 10 yards and cut to the middle of the field, mm-hmm. catch him 15 yards downfield. That may not be there as often just because the way what Utah State does with offense, but he has potential and could get those routes. It's just how's he going to adjust to a different type of play. And he's a deep guy, but he's their best option for a deep guy, but he's not getting 20 plus yards with the traditional pro offense here with the Aggies run.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of shifting to the offensive line, you know, basically everything was said about the pass catchers also applies to this unit too, because they were, you know, one of the more experienced units anywhere in the Mountain West last year. And going into 2023, at least on paper, they're starting over with four starters. You know, Wade Meacham's sort of a lone holdover. He had over 900 snaps last year. But at the same time, again, you can't mistake that with an overall lack of experience, because some of the players that they have, presumably stepping into some of those roles, have seen a lot of playing time over the last two, three seasons. And I think, you know, most evidently, you know, guys like Balapule Alo, who, you know, has seen time at both center and guard, could feasibly start at either position. He has over 1,000 snaps over the last three seasons. You know, same with Cole Motes. You know, he's played right tackle for the most part over the last 2 years. He has over 1,000 snaps as well. I think of those two, Motes is sort of an underrated X factor, because while he's seen a lot of playing time, he's also still got a lot of growth left to do too. Oh, in two seasons, he's also given up 9 sacks as well.
Hmm.
So I think, you know, they're going to be expecting a lot of him, of Alo, and, you know, same as with the pass catchers and with the running backs as well. You know, new guys are going to be, you know, new arrivals, you know, like Ralph Frias, who transferred in from Arizona State, could step up in a role. Wyatt Bowles, who's seen most of his playing time on special teams over the last couple of years, could step up in a role. So there's a lot of moving pieces here too. And it's going to be really important for them to try and hit the ground running if they can. If only because, like, you know, for a lot of things that were sort of up and down last year, they were pretty good overall at opening holes. Like in terms of average line yards per carry, Utah State was actually a top 40 team last year, even if like the standard yards per carry average doesn't necessarily indicate that. They were also very good about keeping defenders from getting into the backfield with a 14.9% stuff rate. That was 26th in the country. I think one potential area of concern, if they can't get it cleaned up, is the fact that Legault struggled a lot, and maybe by extension, all the quarterbacks struggled a lot in more obvious passing down situations. You know, as a team, they allowed a 7.1% sack rate, which is 83rd on passing downs in particular, which is, you know, as you might expect, I'm trying to remember the exact definition of passing downs. It's like, you know, I believe second and seven or more, third downs, fourth downs. They were 118th, is what I'm saying overall. 12.1% sack rate in those situations. So improving on that while also integrating a number of new faces into the offensive line rotation, that's going to be huge for them, how well they sort of cement that.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's like it's dumb cliche. The offensive line wins it for you, it loses it for you in the trenches. So,
yes.
Protect the guy simple, protect open holes for running backs, those type of things. It's going to be, they do have a couple of young guys projected on the two deep as well, a couple of redshirt freshmen
yeah.
out there. So, there's that could maybe they got the talent to beat up the older guys or guys who are more experienced. It's just kind of lame to say there's a bunch of unknowns, but there are a bunch of unknowns for this whole offense, except for a couple of guys.
Yeah, I mean, have 7 or 8 guys who could feasibly start. It's just, you know, the reality
that's
that
good.
Five of them at least are probably going to be relatively new and stepping into much bigger, more prominent roles.
Yeah, it's how can they accept that new responsibility to be like, you're the guy, you're starting at left guard or right tackle, whatever it may be, are you our guy to help lead our team? They need to find, yeah. if there are 7-8 guys out there, they need to find the guy who's going to step up and take advantage and be the starter and play 80% of the snaps, whatever it may be. And when your number two guy gets it, if he's that near, in the same neighborhood, that's not a big drop off. They need to find who can be a leader, who can step up, who's going to come in and knock the other guy on his butt to give a big running lane for Briggs or like Cooper got the extra half second or even 0.2 seconds to make that throw if he rolls out for a moment or takes a step in the pocket and the offensive line knocks the guy trying to get him from behind. Mm-hmm. That's what needs to happen. It's just, we'll see what Coach Anderson decides to do in the offensive line. And we'll know they play Iowa week one, and that we'll get that game. That'll be a very big test going up against one of the better defenses in the country. And we'll know pretty quickly where this lot we should. It's not obviously an Alabama type game where they get their butt kicked. It's a game where, yes, they're outmatched talent wise, but they're not literally unstoppable. They're a very good team, and they'll help Aggie fans us kind of know, okay, here's kind of a glimmer of what to expect. And
you know,
if they have depth, that's good.
And ironically, as we sort of, you know, turn our eyes to the defense, a lot of what you just said also true of the defensive line.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, it took a while for the defensive front to come around last year, but, you know, it was a unit, you know, a front six, a front seven that was pretty strong by season's end. It did a few things pretty well. You know, they ended up finishing 40th overall in sack rate, 7.3%. You know, a lot of that production came in the second half of the season. And they were also 27th in stuff rate, 56th in opportunity rate. So they weren't letting, you know, a lot of big plays on the ground. But again, you know, this was a unit that was hard hit by the transfer portal in particular. Daniel Brzeziak's in Cincinnati. Patrick Joyner Jr., I believe, is at Kansas. Byron Vaughn's at Baylor. So they're starting over in some respects. But again, you know, same as, you know, with guys like Motes and Alo on the offensive line, they've got guys to at least make part of this unit be a lot more stable, especially if they can avoid the injury bug here too. And I look at the interior in particular, mm-hmm. you know, with your starting duo of Hale Motuapuaka and Bokesia Vakauda. Both those guys, you know, played pretty well last year. Both guys got dinged up here and there, missed a game or two last year. But behind them, you know, they also bring back Seni Tuiaki, who, you know, saw a lot of playing time, you know, four games before he missed the rest of the year with an injury. Well, Miley is back. You know, between that quartet, they could be pretty solid on the inside, I think.
Well, Hallie might want to be the best defensive lineman for the conference this year. He has all conference potential. Play the defense tackle, so you have him there. And it's goes without saying, stay healthy, don't miss games like all these guys do for here and there. Like, he could be literally one of the best guys in the whole conference in that position. And if you have him opening things up, or, you know, at Islo, he's getting doubled here, the other guy could step up and make the big play behind him. Like, if that's the case with MJ Talafisi at middle at linebacker there, those two combinations, those two guys are one of the better guys on their front seven. And you mentioned with Pocasay, like, these guys, with what you like, what Utah State does defensively, I know it's hard. It's like, oh, they gave up 50 freaking points to Alabama, 30 something to Weber State. I think it's 30 something, maybe it's more. But point being, overall, it's just difficult to know, because the second half, okay, it's New Mexico, but only 10 points to Mexico, 13 to Colorado State. Their defense needs to give up fewer points, clearly. So it's not to say it's all rosy if these guys step up and play well. Defense was not great last year overall. And no, returning, I mean, only, what, seven starters? But I mean, point-wise, like, they're giving up a lot of points. And some of it's the offense giving the ball up early and defense to put in the bad spot.
To be fair, you know, in terms of, like, you know, net points per drive, net available yards percentage, neither side of the ball really stood out for the Aggies last year. Like, points per drive, for example, they were 92nd on offense and 95th on defense. You know, available yards percentage, they were actually ahead on defense. They were 81st versus 91st on offense. So, I mean, I take your point.
They weren't great.
But I think it's important to keep it in context.
Well, it is. That's what a 6-6 team is. They're 6-7. They're just below average.
Yeah. But I do think, like, the most important thing is, yeah, like, if the interior is set, if the interior can stay healthy, then great. Who's going to set the edge, though?
Yeah, they returned what, one linebacker, MJ Tafusia mentioned. That's about it. Who's returning with a lot of talent? Like projected starters.
Who's going to be that new Byron Vaughns?
Yeah, or AJ Von Japon is a tackle machine. Like those guys, those are two of the biggest guys Austin Portal's in. Right now, we don't know. It's going to be, again, who wants to grab it and be the guy and make plays early if the starting positions aren't set yet. So like take over.
Yeah, and they have some players who saw at least a tiny bit of playing time last season. You know, guys like, you know, John Ward, Inoka Magal, those types of players. One other candidate, another JUCO guy, who could potentially be the answer there is Keon Sloan, who comes in from Northern California, American River College. 12 sacks, 24 TFLs as a JUCO defender last year.
That's good. I like that production.
That'll play. Like if he could get half of that as a newcomer on the Aggies defensive line,
mm-hmm.
that could be huge for them. But I do think it is more likely that they'll be counting upon sort of a team effort to really try and make up the difference that they're losing to the transfer portal. Because, you know, they brought in also Blaine Spires from Bowling Green, Adam Tomsic, who's a redshirt freshman, didn't see any playing time last year. He could step up. So again, they have options here, but I think whoever steps up to, set the edge as a defensive end and additionally how productive they can be, how disruptive they could be, is going to go a long way toward determining this team's ceiling.
Yeah, but because the secondary is pretty set for it to have another area where it's pretty good returning talent, but it's something where, man, they got to find production up front and just kind of attack the quarterback. Like I said, these guys play other JUCO, other places, they could keep that production going. Because think about who they play in a conference. Like, okay, what do you want? What are they playing? Who are they going up against? Because remember also, we probably will mention this every episode and we'll get tired of it. Remember, divisions are gone. So they're just playing whomever. The schedule is basically similar. But you just want to look like when they play Boise State, they play Air Force, they play the same teams, they play Wyoming. What will this defensive front look like? Or how could they be productive against certain teams? Like, we don't necessarily know what their overall strength will be. Because, when you play Air Force, clearly they're running game. When you play, say, Boise State, they'll be running a game, plus a good quarterback receivers. We'll see where they're at. They're good, but may not be great. What does the defense do against those certain teams? They played UConn. They made the bowl game last year. There's a close victory over them. Like, what's it going to look like when they play James Madison, who was surprised everybody moving up to their first level FBS? They got Fresno State, who likely will be throwing the ball around. CSU will throw the ball a lot. San Jose State will throw the ball around. So it might be a lot of secondary and pass rush, where I think what would be the help for the most successful season for them, because they play some pretty good quarterbacks within the conference.
I do think what they have going for them, you mentioned AJ Von a minute ago, losing him, of course, is going to sting. A multi-year starter, very productive, between him and Kaleo Neves, like it sucks to lose them both. But I do think, like, beyond Tafisi, it's the situation there isn't maybe as dire as it first appears. It's sort of like the running backs in that regard, where, having to replace Calvin Tyler Jr. is going to be tough, but Robert Briggs flashed here and there and can very easily step up and be a strong contributor. I think that's also true of a guy like Max Alford, who, was starting for this team down the stretch last year, and like Tafisi, both ended up proving themselves to be, I would say, quietly pretty solid run defenders, if nothing else, among Mountain West linebackers in terms of like their Pro Football Focus's run defense grade. Tafisi and Alford were 3 and 4 in the conference overall, right around 80. And so I think Tafisi, when he was healthy, was productive. Only eight games, but he led the team in tackles per game and had 9 TFLs. Alford too, only 4 TFLs. But all of those came down the stretch in the last 5 games of the year. So I do think that between those two, they also brought in Gavin Barthiel from Washington State. They don't need a ton of depth there since they only play 2 linebackers at a time anyway. And I do think, like, if Tafisi is back to 100% and as productive as ever, if Alford can build upon what we saw from him down the stretch last year in November, they will probably be fine, I think, in that regard.
You think so?
I think so. I mean, I'm not going to call for like either of them to be like an all-conference type of guy, but I do. I don't see any like potential like glaring weak links. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha. Okay. So what about the secondary? They bring back three starters. Ike Larson, who
depending on what you count,
wasn't Ike Larson a starter last year? Two or three, two and a half.
I think he was also starting down the stretch here and there. He and Dominic Tatum were who. Another Aggie who hit the transfer portal. We're splitting time in the second half of the season.
Okay, they've him and Johnny Carter or Michael Onwuahu back there.
Mike Larson. Johnny Carter's actually in the portal.
What? I didn't say Johnny Carter.
Him and Michael Onwuahu are the returning starters.
These magazines go to print too early and I can't keep track of everybody. I apologize for not knowing that Johnny Carter was in the portal. I'm like, what? I trust some of this stuff and this is the portal era.
I forgive you.
I think we keep track of this stuff. You keep track. I would assume when magazine season comes around, but I'm betting they went to print probably right when spring practice ended. But I do know this. I do know Ike Larson is quite the player. Because there was some stat last year. Didn't he have, what was it? Some with pass breakups or something that was like off the charts for a freshman or something last year. I don't remember exactly what it was.
He was, in terms of overall grade, he was the number one defensive back in the conference last year.
Maybe it's a PFF
89.6 PFF grade.
Like, he is a guy, if he takes the next step, which is what he did last year, and gets more playing time, he could be, we haven't done our all-conference stuff yet, but there's a chance he could be in that category for one of the best defenders in the conference, which he already was last year, based on the grade you mentioned from PFF. From what he does and what they have around, it's an area where being safety is a cool position, Matt. You could just get to hang back out there. It's like, ooh, I'm going to catch a ball here. I don't think always have to guard a guy directly. He had, two breakups and four INTs last year. Four INTs and not playing a ton. Like, imagine he getting full-time access back there playing that secondary. And we mentioned the teams that throw the ball, San Jose State, CSU, Boise, Fresno. He's the, I believe he's the leading returner of interceptions in the conference because Cam Lockridge, he transferred from Fresno, right? Or is he still around? I forget.
No, he's there.
Okay, so he's second behind Cam Lockridge. There are so many transfer guys, Porter guys, on his team. So him being that guy who gets the ball and can make interceptions, and he only played 11 games and didn't play full time, there's a chance he's gonna be that main guy back there where teams are gonna want to avoid this part of the field. And yeah, his numbers, hopefully they get better. But if you're that guy who's like, hey, we don't want to throw that area, and they go to somewhere else that takes away part of the field, it's old Deion Sanders thing, I'll take away a third of the field or whatever. And do those type of shenanigans that he likes to do out there when he's playing for the Falcons and Cowboys and Niners. But having a guy that can do that, that's huge, specifically with the team. Like we've mentioned, like their linebacker core, it's like, well, it has depth. Maybe there's talent there. We don't know. But this guy is a clear, experienced player who only played 1 year of college football. He plays this next year, gets a full camp, gets a full season, just more experienced. He's going to be a player out there who going to challenge for one of the top spots in the conference. And that's huge for defense that returns a couple of starters.
Now, see, here's my question, though.
Ooh, what do you got?
Which is not to say it's like a counter argument, but it is sort of it sort of speaks to the reality that not all progress is linear. So my question is,
true,
is he this year's CJ Baskerville?
Why not?
Because and the reason I posed the question that way is because, you know, 2 years ago, Baskerville was in a similar kind of situation where he broke into the starting lineup in the second half of the year for San Diego State back in 2021, played at a very high level. You know, at the end of the year, he was fourth overall in PFF grading among Mountain West defensive backs. And he played the entire season for the Aztecs, and he was good, but he wasn't as good as he was in that small sample size the year before. Which is all to say that, you know, it's one thing to perform at a high level over 240 snaps, which is what Larson did last year.
That's as well.
And it's another thing to do it over, for example, the 900 snaps plus that Hunter Reynolds played for the Aggies last season.
I would say this would be in, like, if you multiply by five, is he getting 20 interceptions? Not a chance, clearly. But it's like,
I mean, I'm just saying, like, yeah, it's a small sample size, and yeah, he played very well despite the circumstances, or given the circumstances rather. But you know, if he's going to be counted on to be a full time starter, you know, that's going to mean raising your game week after week and taking on a full time load that he did not have last year.
So if he was a starter and had these same stats, he'd still be one of the better players in the conference.
But I mean, I'll also say, like, if he ends up having the year that Reynolds did as a safety last year, that's still going to be pretty good. I'm sure that Utah State fans everywhere will take it.
Oh, definitely. It's difficult because Reynolds had 3 picks, 2-7 pass breakups, 10 defended passes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if he's that same category,
minimum, you know, he and Onyon will at least give them a couple of reliable kind of known quantities. Onyon had an interception and 11 pass breakups last year. Beyond that, question mark? For instance, like how effective will Anthony Switzer be coming off an ACL injury that wiped out his 2022 season? He has familiarity with Blake Anderson from their time together at Arkansas State. You know, he was one of the ones who followed Anderson from Jonesboro to Logan. You know, he'll probably take on that striker position that Neves held down last year. And then beyond that, you know, who's going to hold down the other cornerback spot? Is it going to be someone like, you know, Jalen Martin? Is it going to be, you know, a newcomer like, you know, Al Ashford, you know, Xavion Steele, holdover? You know, and you know, same thing. Who's going to line up opposite Larson at the other safety spot? It could be a guy like Javar Strong, you know, Devin Dye, both of whom are also new JUCO arrivals. I think more than anything, this is the one area that of the team that I'm most worried about. Because it wasn't as if they were great last year either.
Oh, no, no. They gave up over 400 yards of passing, 400 yards per game last year in the defense. It was not good.
I mean, I think it's not necessarily like the most accurate, you know, thing to point to, but I do think it's telling that they gave up more passing touchdowns than any other team in the conference last year. They gave up 27.
It's not good.
It's not great. No.
Now
they're having to break in so many new athletes on that side of the ball. It's a really big ask for me to like want to place a ton of faith in them to figure it out.
Well, they have a couple guys. Like Larson's a good starting point. And again, it's also difficult. Like I said, again, look at the passing teams or teams that pass through they're going up against. So it's going to be interesting to see what they can do. So I think I wonder if you're underselling Ike Larson a little bit, but it's also like Briggs. Is he going to come in and at like yards per carry project to triple the more attempts? Mm-hmm. Like, can he keep that same production going while adding more carries and more wear and tear? DB is clearly different. You're not getting banged up as much. So maybe it kind of can, but I think he's a good start out there. He's like legit very, very good. But like you mentioned, Switzer, Jordan Drew, all these other guys out there, like Xavion Steele, maybe it's like they have a look. If our lads is correct, I know they do a pretty good job. They have a total of 6 DB transfers, 4 on the 2 deep.
Mm-hmm.
That's may not be great. And one true freshman, I guess, there as well on there. So sorry, subtract one of those transfer guys. But it's a group where new starters looks like inexperienced, at least with the Utah State team itself, not necessarily inexperienced overall. Like Jalen Martin's a redshirt senior transfer, so he's played a bit, or at least had. So it's an area where this whole defense had issues last year. So like I could say, simple, it can't be worse than last year. Well, don't just bank on that, but actually have players out there who can do something. And you can mention new coordinators, all these transfers. Like, if you ever look at our lads, they put blue and returning guys, and orange are transfers or newcomers. I believe that that's accurate here. They literally have their defense is almost 50-50 going through like their 4 deep on some of these guys, maybe 60-40 guys on the team last year to new guys. So that tells you a few things right there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it can't be worse than last year because it's a simple answer, but I think they'll be a little bit better than last year, and maybe just that little bit better will help them improve that much. Like instead of going up 27 passing touchdowns, you mentioned, it's down to 20. That's a lot of points. They're not giving up if it's 49 different points right there.
That's true.
So what do you got for special teams? What's there we should notice with them?
The upside is they could feel pretty good about their punting situation. Stephen Cotsonley has improved his yards per punt average 2 years in a row. You have to replace Connor Coles at kicker, though. It's definitely going to be a wide open competition. I would have to think that Anderson's going to take as much time as he can to make a decision, because they have holdovers like Elliot Nimrod, who's handled kickoff duties for the past year or two. They also brought in William Testa from New Mexico Military Institute. Only 65% on field goal tries at the JUCO ranks. I would guess that he's the likeliest candidate to win the job, though. Either way, Coles was pretty solid in his tenure, with the Aggies. And so it may not be like the most important player to be replaced. You're still talking about a kicker who, made 70% of his field goal tries last year, 69% the year before, and was really integral to the team's rise to the top. So, having that reliable, that reliable guy who can give you 3 points in a situation when you really need it, which may not necessarily be all that often, considering that Utah State hasn't typically been shy about going for it on fourth downs. They actually tied for first in the conference last year with 34 fourth down attempts. So maybe kicker isn't the most important issue to resolve, but they are definitely going to want to make sure they have one at some point, obviously.
Yes, part of the game is you got the foot part, Matt. Football.
Yeah, kick. They just want to make sure. I'm guessing that they'll take as much time as possible to make sure that they found the most reliable option.
Well, we'll see what happens when they play Iowa to open up the season. So, anything else to mention about schedule, then? That's what we're doing here. Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Week one on the road to play the Iowa Hawkeyes, FS1, 10 a.m. local kickoff. Hey, at least it's not Big Ten Network. We can get that out of the way, right? That's good. That's more Iowa than Utah State. Make all the jokes you want about Iowa with Brian Ferentz, everything back there, his contract where, 25 and a half points a game against the average to keep his job, essentially, his KPIs, whatever you want to call those, and keep things going. Their defense is legit, clearly. Very, very, very good. One of the best in the country. Offense, we all know, make jokes. They won games like 6-2, it seems like, last year. But when these two teams played last season, kind of felt Utah State hang around, but they played Nevada last year, not Utah State. I apologize. Wasn't it game that ended, 4 a.m. Central Time? Is that what it was? With all those lightning and thunderstorms. But with it being the opener, I think Iowa's going to want to come out and kind of prove people wrong and want to score some points. I think. Is that a team that wants to score points now? Is that what they're going to want to do? Because going against Utah State, they likely will be able to score a decent amount of points.
I mean, I have to think so. I was trying to think of a way to describe Iowa football in a really concise way. And what I settled upon is like watching Iowa football, which I did a couple times last year, is sort of like watching Children of Men. It's pretty bleak. But dang, if they don't play some defense, dude.
They play amazing defense. And that's where Cooper Laga, Briggs, Terrell Vaughn, new guys on – not those are not necessarily newish guys, but the guys on offense are going to need to figure something out and try to make plays. Like, I could see Iowa scoring 24 points and winning like 24-6. Or it's like
that's what they've typically done against I think I mentioned this when we did our non-conference countdown a ranking of games. Iowa's 3-0 against the Mountain West in recent years, but they haven't scored more than 27 points in any of those games.
Do you know how bad Spencer Petras, is he going to be their quarterback? Is he the guy?
You know what? For once, he might not be, because the Hawkeyes did bring in Michigan transfer Cade McNamara.
Oh, that's right. Cade McNamara. Okay, good. He's actually
not the only Michigan transfer that they brought in. They also brought in tight end Eric All from the Wolverines as well.
Because that's good for the quarterback, because Petras only had 5 touchdowns last year. He was sacked 32 times.
That dude is bad.
I'm just saying, but he was sacked 32 times. Like the Michigan quarterback, they had the thing last year where they're switching back and forth when they played CSU Hawaii, because Harbaugh's like, all right, it's kind of our preseason. So having him in town, massive upgrade, because those guys were close when they're deciding they were a playoff team, Michigan was the past year. and they couldn't decide who was their quarterback to beat Ohio State. He was there going back and forth, like, okay, you're the guy, you're not the guy. And so bringing in him will be amazing for his offense for an upgrade. They do run the ball reasonably well, so that's something as well they like to do, because they like to control the ball and stuff. And Caleb Johnson was a bright spot as a freshman last year with, 700, almost 800 yards, six touchdowns. So they do have they do move the ball. Well, they have the potential to move the ball. It's just that they had so many turnovers, were not explosive at all last year. And this could be a chance where Utah State's defense comes in and can keep the game close. They're going to have to if they're going to win this game. Like, the defense is going to have to.
Iowa also has one of the most experienced offensive lines in the country as well.
Yeah, and that'll be helpful too.
According to Phil Steele, they returned 114 career starts.
That's amazing. And that will
help. And like, even if the offense, I mean, even if the defense can limit what has historically been a pretty pedestrian Iowa offense, they still got to contend with the Hawkeyes defense too, which has, you know, among others, Cooper DeJean, who might be the best cornerback prospect in next year's NFL draft class. You know, first team Big Ten, and they brought in, you know, Virginia linebacker Nick Jackson through the transfer portal. So even though they're replacing a lot on that side of the ball, you know, this was still a unit that was, you know, they were number one in defensive SP plus last year, number one in points per drive allowed, number three in available yards percentage allowed. So it would not surprise me if Iowa just does what it typically does in non-conference play and just put the opponent in the sleeper hold. There's and just make it the most painful football watching experience that you will ever have as a fan of a visiting team. Which is why I have Utah State losing this game.
Yeah, they also lose a couple guys. Like, Jack Campbell is a top 10 pick to the Lions. They lose their best receiver and tight end this past year.
Sam Laporta.
Yeah, Sam Laporta, too. I didn't see what round, but he's gone. So it is telling when their top two receivers last year were both tight ends, and Luke Lachey and Sam Laporta. So I don't expect Utah State to win. I think it'll be, I don't know where, I'm not sure Iowa's at in those early preseason rankings, but Iowa's going to win. Probably by at least two touchdowns, probably maybe three. But if they get to 30 points, it could be like, again, 30-6, 30-10. It's going to be a tough go for them. And Utah State's unfortunately not going to get to victory on this one. So who do they have week two?
That would be home versus Idaho State. I can give you the FCS minute if you like.
Go for it. They're going to beat the Bengals.
They are going to beat the Bengals. I have that one as a W. The Charlie Regal era in Pocatello only lasted 1 year. ISU went 1-10 last year. But, you know, their new head coach, Cody Hawkins, who, if the name sounds familiar, yes, he is the son of former Boise State head coach Dan Hawkins. You know, he was the offensive coordinator at UC Davis under his dad last year. But, you know, he's taken over a program that, you know, they did a few things, you know, pretty well last year. But one of the things that's really going to be paramount for them in 2023 is sort of perking up a scoring offense that among FCS teams was 118th in the country. They only averaged 13.7 points per game. So, you know, while they do have a couple of nice defensive pieces, you know, they have at least one reliable running back in Raiden Hunter. You know, they're facing the same question that I'm sure we talked about once or twice very briefly last year. Who's their quarterback going to be? Is it going to be Hunter Hayes? Is it going to be Keegan Thompson? Or someone else. Long story short, though, Bengals probably still a rebuilding team. Utah State shouldn't have any trouble beating them at home.
No, it should be an easy victory. So they'll start off for me 1-1, and then they get the early game at Air Force, which
conference opener for both teams.
Yes, they switched to Boise State game, I guess, because everybody's tired of Utah or Boise State and Air Force playing the early conference game. It comes down to clearly what Air Force can do running the ball against this front seven for Utah State, which is, as we described before, has some experience, but may not be top end talent for the most part outside of like, I butchered that name, but also good for them. We'll get to Air Force more. We won't go too much in depth here, but new quarterback situation, losing top running back in the conference, essentially Jacoby Owens. There's some chances here for Utah State potentially to win this game and hang around, but I just don't trust Utah State this year. I'm not a big fan of what the Aggies can do, so I think Air Force will do what they normally do. It is good catching them early because without a new with a new quarterback in place, their timing may not be as pristine as it could be in, say, week 8.
It's interesting because, you know, the Aggies have actually gotten the better of the Falcons in each of the last two seasons, including the road last year, at home last year. So they're on the road in Colorado Springs, but they won their last trip there. And so I do think that, you know, what's likely to be the tale of this game, we'll talk more about the Falcons in detail later on this summer, defense. You know, I expect that the Falcons are going to have a pretty good defense. I think Utah State is going to have a better than you think run defense, if nothing else, which I do think could make them a particularly tricky matchup, as you mentioned, for an Air Force offense that's having to replace, you know, the nation's leading rusher and its quarterback. So maybe it comes as a surprise, but I do think that Utah State will be able to pull this one out on the road.
Interesting. I have it as loss. I'm sorry, Aggie fans. Now that they get to host the James Madison, newly FBS James Madison, which they were not eligible for a bowl because of stupid transition rules. They're a preseason potential top 25 team, which is crazy to think about. But I guess not the way they put last year. And do they still have Todd Senteos? He's still their quarterback out there?
No, he moved on.
He moved on. He found a place where he could play. And he did amazing things last year. So I don't know if Rams fans are a little bit bitter or whatnot, but the offense is what was pretty good, actually really good for James Madison. And so losing your starting quarterback from last year, not ideal. But it is interesting, like looking at just real quick, FPI. Do you want to guess the projected at what FPI says for this game?
I'm not gonna guess. I'm just gonna let you tell me.
Okay, I don't want you to sound like a fool. That's a good call by you. 52.7% for Utah State at home versus James
Madison. Interesting.
So almost basically a toss up.
Well, what's interesting about this matchup, like, you know, the Dukes came out swinging in year one at the FBS level. You know, Senteo, of course, was a very big reason for that. But, you know, they're also having to replace, you know, two of their top three rushers as well. Senteo is one of them as the quarterback, but they're also replacing their leading rusher, you know, Percy Agiai-Obese. But even despite that, you know, you mentioned the offense. I didn't realize how good their defense was last year. So, you know, points per drive allowed, they were ninth overall in the country. They were number one in available yards percentage allowed per drive. Number two overall in team sack rate. You just go down the line in some of these more advanced numbers, and they're just like, you know, top, you know, they were number one in the country, for example, in average line yards per carry allowed. Number one in opportunity rates, preventing teams from getting to the second level on the ground. This was a really good defense that, oh, by the way, also returns a lot of those key pieces. You know, the big name that you're going to want to definitely keep an eye on ahead of the game, you know, defensive lineman James Carpenter, you know, what did he have last year? 5.5 sacks, 11.5 TFLs on the interior. You know, Torrus Jones at linebacker had 10.5 TFLs and 82 tackles. So that's a unit that still has a ton of talent, which I think, at least for this year, given sort of the uncertainty about how reliable the Aggies are going to be about taking care of the football, it sort of strikes me as a bad matchup overall for them, even at home. So I have James Madison winning this one.
It does. James Madison, also SP Plus, has them as the best team in the Sun Belt, better than Coastal, which returns Grayson McCall. So they have they're basically a pretty balanced offense, 63, defense 67 in SP Plus. So that's really good for a team outside Power Conference, especially when they're conference in the Sun Belt, at least projected, if they can even do that, because they still have the pesky waivers, which you never know. So that's the thing to look out for, where they're pretty balanced both sides of the ball, but I'm going to say going west in this far of a game, I think Utah State's going to pull it out.
Okay.
I think James Madison might have better talent overall, which is weird to say because if you look at recruiting trends and things like that, they've recruited, I don't have in front of me, but pretty to do what they did at the FCS level, they're recruiting probably better than a handful of FBS teams at the minimum. Mm. And also what matters a lot, they're used to winning games. Like a lot of these guys are still playing in FCS. They're winning games. They're going deep playoff runs. These guys know how to play and win. Coach knows how to play and win. That's all they do is win. And so it's like, why would that change going to FBS level to a conference that's good but not great? And they beat up on, I believe, didn't they beat Virginia last year, I want to say? I forget if they beat one of those teams in state schools.
Yeah, they have the schedule in front of me.
I mean, I'm sure, I remember they won double digit games and were really good, and people were upset they couldn't get to the title game because they started at 5-0. So, App State win, that was a big one, right? That was right there. So, I just think I'm just leaning a touch Utah State. But I think the travel wise and stuff like that, because when you're FCS, you play more regional type games. This may be a weird me rationalizing it, but I just think going west playing altitude's a thing. I think they're not going to beat Utah State, but it'll be one of the more interesting games I want to see this year on the schedule.
Okay.
Then they go to UConn, who Jim Morris says, I want to win a national title at UConn. I'm like, what are you talking about? What are you doing?
Okay.
Did you hear those comments?
I had not heard those comments, but okay, you do you.
Good for you. Yeah, pat the back. Good job. Hope everything works out for you. Life is good. This is not UCLA or Washington, pal, or even the Atlanta Falcons, where he kind of bungled it too. But this is a UConn team. We shouldn't just say, oh, victory no matter what, because they actually did a really good job going to qualifying for bowl game last year.
Yeah, and a lot of it came on the strength of a defense that was maybe a lot better than a lot of people expected it might be. And yeah, they didn't necessarily play like the most rigid, stringent schedule or anything like that, but they gave Utah State a fight. They beat a depleted Fresno State team, if you remember that. And a lot of those players on that defense are back for another round. You know, Jackson Mitchell, who we talked about a little bit last year, he's back, and he has more established help this time around. Defensive end duo of Eric Watts, Price Yates. Those two had 28 and a half combined TFLs last year and 16 sacks. So I think where this game is going to hinge is sort of the same pivot point that was, last year, is what is the offense going to look like? Because, for as good as defense was at times, they were still 107th in points per drive on offense, 115th in available yards percentage. So they still got some work to do on that side of the ball. They do have a preseason All-American offensive lineman in Christian Hayes, but they've got an open quarterback competition. They brought in Joe Fagnano from Maine. They return, Taquan Roberson and Zion Turner, both of whom have seen playing time over the last year or two. Mm-hmm. And they have, veteran wide receivers like Cameron Ross back. So I can see this scenario where it's just as competitive as it was last year, but I do ultimately see the same result. I do think Utah State should be able to win this one on the road.
I don't know. I'm so sure about that. I'm going with the reverse James Madison, where the travel and just the going that type of going across the country. Do we know what the kick time is for this game? Probably not, because UConn's still an independent.
I don't have that off the top of my head.
Looks like no. I'm just gonna leave UConn because they struggled last year. Jim Moore has his team rolling from what they've done. By actually winning games from the years before, they're a laughing stock. I'm sorry, guys. I don't like Utah State this year that much. I like their quarterback, but beyond that, no, I'm changed. I'm going victory. I can't do it. I cannot do it. Still okay. UConn, the laughable Huskies. Sorry, guys. I'm going with you. Yeah, Utah State after the little switcher. I was leaning. This game was a tough one to pick just because I don't really. The Aggies would be great, but I'm going with the victory. So they'll be 4-1 as they head into the full stretch of league play. And then for me, that's where it gets dicey and not good.
You and me both.
So their schedule is, this is a very difficult, they got Colorado State, but this stretch they have, we have CSU obviously at home, we just mentioned, Fresno State at home, at San Jose State, at San Diego State, okay, Nevada, and then Boise State at home. Four or five after CSU is one of the difficult one in the country. And going, I know, okay, San Jose State, whatever, road game, their home field is not ideal. It's not like crazy, I should say. It's like, it's not intimidating, but you're not playing at home. You're playing one of the best quarterbacks in the conference. Then you're playing San Diego State on the road, which will be a difficult road atmosphere. I have them losing 4 in a row after UConn. losing to CSU, losing to Fresno, at San Jose State, at San Diego State. You can listen last week while we talked more about CSU. I think CSU is winnable. I think Fresno State, Jeff Tedford will just outclash Blake Anderson, regardless should they have a quarterback or running back and receivers losing transfers, which they did. San Jose State's just more talent overall. San Diego State, same thing. Aztecs, I might put that number two on the list, but it's like a distant, far distant number two they could win. If I'm going in order of games, I would put that number two as winnable, but I'm still not very likely thinking that could happen.
I think of that four-game stretch, the most winnable games are at home against CSU and on the road at San Jose.
Interesting. Why San Jose over San Diego State?
I do think that, you know, the Spartans, which again, we'll talk about that later in the summer, one of their biggest questions is how effectively are they going to be able to protect Siobhan Cordero? Mm-hmm. And if the Aggies have a respectable pass rush, let's not forget that, you know, this Utah State team got the better of the Spartans last year too. And San Jose State is dealing with a lot more questions on defense than they were last year as well.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. That's fair. With San Diego State's running back situation not being great, losing guys on defense a little bit, I just think there's a chance. I like San Jose State better as a better, more complete team. Mm-hmm. And then they have Nevada, Boise, New Mexico. I have them 2-1.
And I think I have Nevada as a win, Boise State as a loss, but I have them losing at New Mexico as well.
Whoa! What? At the Lobos? What? Explain yourself, sir.
Without giving too much away, I just think that New Mexico is going to be improved this year.
You're holding the flag for the UAB guys coming into town.
Long story short, maybe we can call this a tease. Just say I'm buying New Mexico stock, a little bit of New Mexico stock at least.
We do recall you were typically past couple of years. I remember the Hawaii year. You like, they're going to be good, really good, and they're quite good a couple of years ago. I think only once you've kind of stumbled on these, like, this is my team to make the big jump. So don't take this lightly that Matt thinks New Mexico is going to be much improved. You mentioned UNLV before in the past, trying to think of other teams you mentioned, but I do remember Hawaii specifically a couple of years ago with Todd Graham, like, they're watching this team, they're a surprise. So with Matt saying New Mexico could surprise, trust him.
Or at least keep an eye on them. Don't sleep on them. We'll talk more about that later.
Boise State, clearly, talent-wise, at the moment, it's better. Coaching-wise, is better, I believe. At least with Andy Avalos taking the next step last year to what the Broncos achieved. Nevada, Ken Wilson has a ton to go through. Again, we'll talk more detail about these teams. We got to listen to those shows as well. But Ken Wilson being a defensive coach, that could be a thing possibly against Utah State, especially if the offensive line doesn't gel, the new running backs can't get things going. There's potential there. And then New Mexico, like, they're not going to be worse than last year, I think, in the past couple of years. They were 0-4 in conference last year. They're 0-6 in 2020. They got to have turned something around, but I still don't think it'll be enough for Utah State to succumb to them on the road in Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. Do you have any bold predictions for Utah State? We'll wrap up on this step. Any kind of – I know we did a prediction show a couple weeks ago. Any kind of bold things you're looking at this year? You want to stick your neck out?
Nothing that immediately comes to mind. I know that sounds like a cop-out.
That's okay. Oh, I skipped the part. What's your record? I have them 5-7. We should mention that.
I have them 4-8 overall, 2-6 in Mountain West play.
I thought 5-7 was not great. I think if they're going to – we'll get to projections here. I guess you gave your answer. That's fine. I think if they're going to a bowl game, I think the important games – I think our CSU is a big one. If they're going to get to the bowl game, that might hinge. Like, that might be the most important game all year to get to 6 wins.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to steal a game or two in the same way that they did last year.
I think James Madison for me is stealing a win, kind of. And maybe even UConn. Maybe UConn.
No, I think if they're going to do it, they're going to have to win road games in conference play. I think that's where you do it. You know, at Air Force, at San Jose State, at San Diego State, at New Mexico. If you can win the majority of those.
Majority? Which is doable. Give me two.
Like two three of those. If you could win like two, if you can go 2-2, 3-1 at least, that puts you in a much better position to get the 6 wins that you need to secure a bowl bid. I don't know if I necessarily see their ceiling being much higher than that. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if, like, if some of these sort of, like, you know, 60-40 type games that I see, you know, I penciled them in to lose to Colorado State, San Jose State, New Mexico, but they could win all three of those games. All of a sudden, you're talking about a 7-5 team that's maybe outperforming expectations, which is definitely within the realm of possibility. But, you know, maybe on like a scale of 1 to 100, where would you put their probability of getting to 6-6?
Man, I should look at FPI because I know they do that stuff, but I'm not going to. Okay, again,
25%.
Yeah, that's what you think.
Higher or lower? Like 1-4?
Yeah, I'll go about there because I'm trying to think probability wise. Like people say, oh, 1-10, 1-8, it's not that big a deal. That's a pretty big percentage for certain things. I think, yeah, it's 25 to 30%. But I'd also say, well, no, I wouldn't say that. Their range is between is 4 to 6 wins. If they get a 7 wins, they're surprising multiple teams.
Okay, well, maybe one last question to send it off into the evening, because we did get a question from one of our Twitter followers, Braden T. Clark. Do you see any parallels to the 2021 team?
That was Blake Anderson's first year?
Yes, the team that won the Mountain West.
Besides getting a handful of transfers from Arkansas State, no, I don't. Not really. Do you?
I mean, in the sense that, you know, even though they lost a ton of players through the transfer portal, they've been very active about, you know, sort of casting a very wide net to try and, you know, make up the difference. I think, you know, one big difference between that team and this team is they're not starting from the same kind of abyss that they were when they went 1-5 year True. Before Anderson's arrival. I think one of the other major differences. Yeah, one of the other major differences is there's a little less recruiting from like the Power Five this time around. And I think there's a much bigger imprint for JUCO contributors. You know, we mentioned like 4 or 5 guys, you know, Javar Strong, Devin Dye, Davon Booth, you know, Keon Sloan. That's 4 guys right there that could step up and make a difference who came from the junior college ranks. And so I do think like their ability to cast a wide net and find new contributors with that in mind, to me, that seems to be the sort of the thread that ties this team to that one. But I will say, like, it does seem a lot less clear cut, you know, their path to a potential conference title. I'll say that.
Yeah, I don't see them pulling that around. I just don't. Even though 1-5, that 2020 year was a million reasons why it was bad. Clearly, there was a lot.
Well, I mean, and Bill Connolly wrote about this in the off season. I want to say before 2022 that there were certain things about the championship run that were going to be really hard to replicate. Like, and I think one thing, if memory serves, was like the rate of explosive plays that they had in certain situations was going to be really difficult to do again. And in some ways they fell off in that regard. And I think a lot of that is related to some of the things we've talked about in this podcast, like the increase in turnovers and things like that. But the good news is those things could just as easily regress in the opposite direction, back toward average, or maybe a little bit better than average. So you never know. I think that Blake Anderson has earned at least a little bit of benefit of the doubt. I might be underselling the Aggies here a little bit. It wouldn't shock me if they ended up making it to a bowl game. But I'm just sort of waiting and seeing what this team ultimately looks like with just enough questions to give me a little pause.
That's why I'm at 5-7. I have my prediction. It's a bold one. I've hinted at it throughout the offseason. Do you have any inkling of what it might be if you want to get first crack at my bold prediction? You have no clue? Okay. Head coach Blake Anderson will not be back next year. And it might be because they do play poorly or might be because they do good, which is kind of a cop-out, but I don't see him being back next year, regardless of how the team finishes.
Interesting. All right.
Would you like to hear why, maybe?
Yes, I would.
They have a new AD. Well, first off, they have a new AD in town, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's been some chatter of him not being a big fan of the location of being at Utah State. Because remember, we've had the lawsuit stuff going up against him. him discussing like victim culture, that type of stuff, where he's kind of, I get where he's coming from, but he didn't say it in the best way to relate to the teams. So there's some stuff he probably doesn't want to deal with that have been bugging him, or not bugging him, but kind of, I don't want to sound sensitive, but kind of non-coaching things that have been on his plate, whether they have been him shooting himself in the foot or not. And so I think he's not back regardless of how they do. I would put, I'd say about, well, about above 50%.
All right, then.
And my information of knowing that is very little, but just another, just kind of putting stuff together. I think he wants out of town. And I don't think he would be terribly upset if he was 4-8 and took a coordinator job somewhere else next year to build back up. Or he gets 7-5 and takes a, what job could open? The Cal job, because Justin Wilcox finally gets fired or something. So that's pretty bold. I'm predicting this in what's today? June 11th, 2023. So that's where I'm going with the bold prediction. That's probably my boldest of the whole season. So
I guess sorry, Aggie fans,
if I wrote this podcast for you at the end here. You gotta wait to the end to finish and hear all the stuff. So that's it for this week. MWWire.com, where you can check out all of our stuff, our written stuff, all of our podcasts, prior ones. CSU was last show. Utah State currently, obviously, at the moment. Next show, TBD, will be up to you. I'm not putting on the spot. It'll be four new teams. This week will be the final. Do you happen to know what four you didn't choose yet? Or should we just not say that and we move on?
let's save our listeners some time.
We'll just mention this. It's the eight we haven't done yet. And then we'll go through and just randomly pick the four we're going to go with. So check our Twitter, MWCYR, so you can vote for what team we want to discuss next. And just keep on trucking. We're here with you. The season's coming in about 12 weeks away, approximately 10 weeks. And we'll see you next time, and just keep listening. We'll get to your team next, folks.